It's Thursday, September 17th, and this is VOA's International Edition. Hi, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Coming up, division among European nations as refugees face more challenges. The Obama administration confident of moving forward on the Iran nuclear deal.
There have not been many cases like this, where you have a soldier who, apparently, from what we know from the evidence, abandoned his combat outpost.
A U.S. Army sergeant once held by the Taliban faces a court-martial. Also ahead, five cities each hope to host the 2024 Summer Olympics. And technology recreates Whitney Houston. All on today's International Edition. UN Chief Ban Ki-moon denounced Hungary's treatment of migrants as unacceptable Wednesday after police fired tear gas and sprayed water cannons at hundreds of asylum seekers on the country's border with Serbia. "I was shocked to see how these refugees and migrants were treated," Ban Ki-moon said. "It's not acceptable." The UN Secretary General said the migrants were people fleeing war and persecution and that they must be treated with human dignity. Police clashed for hours with the migrants after blocking one of the biggest entry points into the European Union. Hungary says the migrants were trying to push their way past the border fence and presented a danger to the country. VOA correspondent Luis Ramirez is on the ground in Munich, Germany, and tells International Edition host Susan Yockey that EU nations remain divergent on strategies to deal with the huge influx of refugees.
The split is certainly deepening between Germany and other nations of Europe, particularly those in Eastern Europe, who are really not in agreement with Germany. Germany wants each country to accept 160,000 refugees per year. Some nations are saying, well, we don't have the economy or the infrastructure or the obligation to do so. Germany has threatened to push for EU sanctions against those countries that do not accept the quotas. That has prompted a very angry response from some nations, most notably Slovakia. Its leader this week said that Slovakia will never accept such a quota and that, in fact, such a measure will bring, in his words, the end of the EU.
Is this a pattern set in history somehow?
It is a pattern very much set in history, primarily, very recent history, within the decades after the Second World War. That was a time when the nations of Western Europe were rebuilding. They had issues of population decline, lack of manpower, and so they started inviting, in fact, workers, guest workers, they call them, from nations including Turkey. In the case of Great Britain, France, and the Netherlands, they drew from their former colonies. And so they have had time to assimilate and they've been conditioned to accept these migrants, whereas the nations of Eastern Europe do not have a history of accepting migrants. These were countries that lived under communist rule and where there was not the same level of development as there was in Western Europe. And so they are not as used to seeing migrants come in. Just to give you an example, there are only about 1% of the population of Hungary is foreign-born.
So what is the situation in the region today, Luis?
We continue to see a pretty substantial influx despite the border controls, despite actions by Hungary to seal its border to migrants coming in from Serbia. The police in Munich this morning told me that the rate is at 1,800 migrants coming in through this city alone every day since Monday. And so that is a slower rate than we had seen in days previous. For example, over the weekend, that is Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, there were 20,000 migrants coming through the Munich train station. What the German authorities are doing now is they are busing people to various parts of the country, doing everything they can to ensure that the migrants do not stay in Munich, do not linger here, and do not accumulate here as they had in days past. One of the reasons is that, we have another influx coming in, and that has to do with the upcoming Oktoberfest. That will last 2 weeks and will bring thousands of of visitors to the city. Police being very careful, city authorities being very careful not to let the two groups mingle.
VOA's Luis Ramirez in Munich. Our own G. Abby Lee is right here in Studio 22 with the latest on social media reaction to the ongoing refugee crisis. G, do we have any reaction from international organizations?
Hi, Jim. We certainly do. One handle I want to highlight today is that of the UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon spokesperson, and the handle is at UN underscore spokesperson. And that account has been live-tweeting his media briefing since noon Eastern Standard Time. Jim, let me just highlight two tweets relating to the refugee crisis. Here's one. Hashtag UNSG Ban Ki-moon commends countries that are admirably doing all they can for the people in need. It tagged the UNHCR and UNOCHA in the tweet. Another one reads like this. People fleeing war and persecution deserve real support, including asylum. Now, if you want to read the full transcript of the briefing, you can go to the UN homepage at un.org.
Well, speaking of media briefing, how are the global media outlets covering the situation?
Quite closely, and the one that I want to talk about today has pretty graphic images of the refugee struggles. Russia state-funded broadcaster RT is on Twitter at rt_.com, and one tweet that's getting a lot of attention reads like this. Blood and tears. Chaotic scenes at Hungarian border as hashtag refugees come under tear gas. It also has a link to its YouTube page and four pictures attached.
What do they look like?
The first one is of a father holding a baby, and there's blood all over the father's face. There's also one in which a small boy is standing by himself in the middle of a crowd crying. That tweet has been retweeted more than 350 times and marked as a favorite nearly 80 times. Jim?
Well, great social media analysis, as always, from our own G. Abby Lee. You can find her on Twitter, of course, at G. Abby Lee. This is VOA.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
I'm Millar Sega, host of VOA's The Correspondents, a weekly roundup of the top stories with analysis from our dedicated reporters around the globe.
Among the stars expressing support, Frida Pinto.
This is a problem that inflicts almost every country.
Think of it as a conversation on the biggest issues of the day. Wherever the news may be, our correspondents are there. Listen to The Correspondents, Saturdays and Sundays on VOA.
This is VOA's International Edition. U.S. Vice President Joe Biden's national security advisor said Tuesday that despite the best efforts of opponents to demonize the Iran nuclear deal, the U.S. is moving forward with the agreement. Republicans in Congress have staunchly opposed the agreement reached in July between Iran and a group that includes the United States, Britain, China, France, Russia, and Germany. Lawmakers have 60 days to review the terms and either vote for or against the deal. Republicans so far have failed in their bid to advance a resolution to reject it. Arms Control Association senior fellow Greg Thielman discussed his perspectives on the agreement, known as the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, with VOA's Jeffrey Young.
Well, the first point I would make is that this agreement has done the most important thing for preventing an Iranian nuclear weapons capability. That is, it blocks off the pathways for Iran to actually develop a nuclear warhead to put on a missile that would threaten its neighbors or conceivably people beyond the Middle East. So that's the first thing to keep in mind. But beyond that, this agreement has more limits on delivery vehicles than was expected. Many people, certainly the Iranians, expected that this agreement would drop all of the UN Security Council resolution bans on ballistic missiles because it was basically about nuclear weapons and not about delivery vehicles. But the surprise was that it even extended the ballistic missile restrictions for another 8 years into the future. So this is really a major impediment to Iran making significant advances, even in their delivery systems. And when one looks at what Iran has been doing, Iran has not been working on its medium-range ballistic missiles that could reach Israel. And there's really no evidence at all that Iran has an active program to develop longer-range systems. What Iran is doing is basically trying to substitute for the fact that it has essentially no air force to have at least a modest deterrent in the Persian Gulf region against hostile forces in the Persian Gulf and against people on the other side of the Persian Gulf that are threatening Iran. So an awful lot of the rhetoric about Iranian ballistic missiles have been exaggerated in comments in Washington by politicians.
Having a workable missile to begin with, and number two, a warhead that would fit on the missile. And most warheads these days are in the 500 kilogram range. That's a pretty small miniaturization for a nuclear device, correct?
That's right. The United States, most other members of the international community trying to restrict nuclear weapons technology, use this 500 kilogram payload as a indication of what the size of a warhead would be that the U.S. has to protect against in terms of delivery vehicles. So the truth is that countries that are just developing nuclear weapons for the first time, particularly when they don't have access to a lot of nuclear weapons testing or design information, build very heavy and large nuclear warheads, and it takes a lot of work to miniaturize the warhead and put it on a missile that can achieve significant range.
Several Republicans running in next year's U.S. presidential election have pledged to alter or scrap the deal should they be elected. U.S. Army Sergeant Bo Bergdahl, who has been charged with desertion, goes before an Army court hearing at Fort Sam Houston in San Antonio, Texas, later Thursday. He was held for 5 years by the Taliban in Afghanistan before his release last year in exchange for five detainees held at the U.S. naval base at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. As VOA's Greg Flakus reports from Houston, Bergdahl faces a separate charge that could get him life in prison.
At the hearing Thursday, Army prosecutors will begin laying out their case against Sergeant Bergdahl, focusing at first on the desertion charge. The panel hearing the arguments serves the same function as a grand jury in civilian criminal cases and will either recommend a court-martial or dismissal of charges. The other charge against Bergdahl of misbehavior before the enemy was used nearly 500 times during World War II, but has rarely been used since the war ended in 1945. Jeffrey Korn, a former Army attorney and current professor at South Texas College of Law in Houston, says the charge is appropriate in this case, given the evidence.
It hasn't been used much because there have not been many cases like this, where you have a soldier who, apparently, from what we know from the evidence, abandoned his combat outpost, leaving his equipment behind, and put himself, at best, in a position where he was vulnerable to capture by the enemy.
Shortly after the Taliban released him in May of last year, soldiers who served with Bergdahl accused him of putting their lives at risk, and there was speculation that he had joined or had tried to join the enemy. Army investigators, however, found no evidence to back that accusation and cite evidence that Bergdahl was held captive and was beaten by his captors after he attempted to escape. Republicans criticized President Obama for making the deal, arguing that he had set free five men who could return to the fight against U.S. troops in return for a soldier who deserted his post. Another theme of those critical of the prisoner exchange is that Bergdahl's desertion resulted in death and injury to other soldiers trying to rescue him. While the desertion charge comes with a maximum sentence of 5 years in prison, Korn says the misbehavior before the enemy charge could result in a much harsher sentence.
If it's misbehavior before the enemy, it could be as much as life in prison. I don't think it'll be anything close to that. I think the main effort of the government sentencing argument will be a dishonorable discharge.
It's also possible that Army prosecutors and Bergdahl's lawyers will work out a plea bargain deal, whereby the soldier would relieve the military court of carrying out a long trial in exchange for a guilty plea and a moderate punishment. He could, for example, use his time in captivity to reduce whatever prison time is ordered. Bergdahl may also seek to protect his back pay and veterans benefits by accepting prison time rather than a dishonorable discharge. Greg Flakus, VOA News, Houston.
You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
News is mobile, and so are you. Get VOA on the go. Get VOA on Google Currents. Get VOA News specifically made for your tablet and smartphone. Clean, simple, fast. Now available for Android or Apple phones or tablets. Download the Google Currents app for free today. Get VOA on Google Currents at voanews.com/currents.
Do you lead a busy life? Not always able to catch your favorite VOA radio or TV program? If you are keen to stay in touch with world news and events, give VOA podcasts a try.
VOAnews.com.
Visit our website at VOAnews.com to learn how you can become a subscriber to VOA podcasts and keep your life up to date.
VOA News, your trusted source for news and information.
The International Olympic Committee has announced five finalists to host the 2024 Summer Olympic Games. The four European cities of Budapest, Hamburg, Paris, and Rome, and the U.S. West Coast city of Los Angeles. The IOC made its announcement soon after the midnight Tuesday deadline for contenders. IOC President Thomas Bach called the finalists outstanding cities and predicted that the race will be strong and fascinating. The final decision is to be announced in 2017, so mark your calendars. This is the first Olympics planned under IOC reforms that are geared toward making the event more cost-effective for host cities and more useful for their long-term development plans. Bach said on Wednesday that the IOC will contribute $1.7 billion to the event. Paris is bidding for a chance to host a centennial version of the 1924 Games that were held in that city, while Los Angeles wants a chance to host again after it held the Games in 1932 and again in 1984. Well, it's been more than 3 years since the late pop diva Whitney Houston died, but now people who never got the chance to see her in concert will have the opportunity to do so thanks to technology. International Edition's David Byrd spoke with VOA Soul Lounge host Shauna Renee about the holographic Whitney Houston concert that's planned for next year.
Shauna, this is going to be a hologram of Whitney Houston that's going to be in concert. Explain that.
Okay, well, in 2016, Whitney Houston, the hologram, will be making an appearance somewhere in the U.S. And so this will be a visual representation of Whitney in concert. So it will include this hologram singing. It'll include choreography, as it were. Whitney was not a very well-known dancer. It will, as you say, give folks the opportunity who have never seen her before to do so. And then also give those of us who have had the opportunity to see her and loved her a chance to experience Whitney Houston as we did in concert. But then also in other ways, because they're going to expand this beyond just her performing and include other elements as well.
Now, this has got the approval of the Houston estate. This is not just something somebody cooked up. The people who are actually in charge of her estate have approved this, right?
Yes, and it's taken a couple of years. They were approached, Pat Houston and Sissy Houston, her mom, were approached with this idea a couple of years ago, but it was still very fresh, her death. And they weren't certain that it would be the best thing and that it might be a little insensitive. But now they have agreed, and so we know that 2016, a group called Hologram USA will be the ones to create this. And what I think is interesting is that they're going to do one concert in the U.S. It'll be broadcast online. And then beyond that, there'll be like a year-long residency, and then they'll take it internationally. So Whitney will be going on a world tour, if you will.
And this is not the first time that this kind of thing has been attempted, right? There was one with Snoop Dogg and Tupac, and a couple of other artists have done this too?
Absolutely. In fact, this company, Hologram USA, they've done Buddy Holly, they've done Roy Orbison, they've done Liberace, Patsy Cline. So they've done some pretty high-level celebrities in the past, and my understanding is they've done them justice, which is why the Houston estate agreed to work with this company in particular.
It doesn't look kind of like ghosty like you would imagine. It actually looks like the person is really there. It's not like you can see through them or something.
Yeah, but and it's very interesting. They did one of Michael Jackson not too long ago, and again, it was, you know, fairly soon after his death, It brings up really interesting emotions because on one hand, it's exciting to see them again. But then on the other hand, you know that it's not them in real life. They're gone. And it just, you know, it's this is 2016 technology. What can you say?
Well, if you have any comment about this, please let Shauna know. You can hit her up on Twitter. She is at VOA Lady DJ. You can also send a tweet to at VOA underscore music. You can listen for her show, The Soul Lounge, on our website, voanews.com.
Well, it's not available yet, but perhaps one day you can see a holographic version of our program, complete with our director Tracy Carter and engineer Dan Crafton. Now that would be a show. Until then, you have to be content with listening to International Edition. Of course, you can find us always at voanews.com. We're also on Twitter at VOA underscore IE. Send us an email, voaasia@voanews.com. We always thank you for joining us. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We hope you have a great day. Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Officials in the Central African Republic are working diligently to prepare for long-awaited national elections, despite some organizational challenges. Vote organizers face difficult circumstances as they seek to find solutions to address the country's vast interior and minimal infrastructure, and bring the ballot to all eligible voters. Owing to these challenges, voter registration is behind schedule in some provinces, and officials continue to work to compile an accurate voter list. Further, before the elections can be held, the public also has to vote on a new constitution designed to form the base of the next government. The Transitional National Council finalized a draft of the constitution on August 30th, and the national referendum is scheduled for October 4th. Elections were originally due in February, but have already been postponed twice. The United Nations, which has a 12,000-strong peacekeeping mission in the country, and partner nations have warned that significant delays beyond the current elections calendar could worsen security. Nevertheless, as work to prepare for the vote continues, some progress has been made in laying the groundwork for credible elections that usher in a legitimately elected government. The CAR's Transitional Constitutional Court upheld a clause in the Transitional National Charter on August 28th, that bars current and former senior transitional government members from running when the vote is finally held. The United States commends the court for its decision, which upholds the rule of law and provides a clear signal to the people of the CAR that political authority in their country is bound by the tenets of the interim constitution, not arbitrary decisions. We call upon all members of the transitional government, past and future, to respect the court's ruling. The United States further commends the Constitutional Court for its strong rulings in January and July in favor of including refugees in the elections, an important decision that seeks to ensure that the elections are representative and that the CAR's future is inclusive of its entire population. We call upon the transitional government, including those in charge of elections preparations, to reinforce the spirit of the decision by redoubling efforts to organize and expand elections preparations.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.